Good morning, everybody, and thanks for attending this session. It's pretty chilly outside, so thanks, everybody. Today I'm going to talk about individual and neighborhood correlates of substance use among opioid-dependent urban inner-city residents. I'm going to briefly acknowledge my collaborators here, Curtis Denton, my PhD student in my department, and Dr. Shana Still-Brown and Frederick Altus from Yale University School of Medicine. And Shana Still-Brown is here, so she could also answer some questions if I can't. Okay. No, you don't? Do you want to? Okay. So, I'm going to briefly give you the context of today's presentation. As research practitioners and health researchers, they have provided wealth of information of individual level factors associated with risk behaviors of drug use and different barriers for substance use disorder treatment. Parallel to that, and more recently, we have also seen a significant amount of research done on studies on neighborhood factors and substance use disorders as well. Although a little out of scope of this talk, I would like to spend 1 or 2 minutes talking about how the different disciplines, which also does a lot of health-related work like geography, sociology, anthropology, they have also significantly contributed to this portion of the research here, where neighborhood factors are correlated with substance use. And mainly because of the availability of data that we have right now in terms of GIS, GPS, and all other sensors that we are seeing in the current literature. Technology, that's also played a very important role, and definitely statistical advances have also led these two groups of research that we're doing, you know, in their own buildings, in their own silos, they have come together. I would like to say that their love affair has started and it's going towards more marriage, wedding marriage now. So with that background, today I would like to talk about some of these interactions between these individual level factors and neighborhood level factors. Studies have also done on this aspect, and I would like to say that our study is contributing to this effort where these individual level factors interact with neighborhood and vice versa and explain the prevalence or the barriers of substance use disorder treatments. Now, another angle I would like to put here is the challenges that we see when we look at these interactions in urban city, inner city neighborhoods. Here I have some examples from my study area, which I will explain shortly, but just to give you a flavor of what these challenges would look like in an urban city neighborhoods and among the residents there. So one would be poverty. We are all aware that, you know, poverty is a big concern in inner cities, and Washington, D.C. is not an exception to that. There are pockets of high poverty, low poverty. So these contextual level informations are very important to keep in mind when we're looking at this correlates or risk factors and things like that. On top of that, we have race. Again, needless to mention, if you see the map here of the percentage of African American, it is very, very clustered, right? So we have to take into account such clusterings when we're talking about neighborhood correlates. Same with crime. So all these three things, poverty, race, and crime, actually plays puts up more challenges here to understand the interaction between the neighborhood and the individual level factors. Okay, so we focus the research on the social ecological model. Most of us in this room are aware of this model, so I will not going to go in details of that. For this particular paper, we have used 4 models, and I'm going to focus on the individual and the neighborhood levels for this particular presentation. Objectives. In terms of the primary objective, as I've already mentioned, I'm interested to find the individual risk factors, neighborhood risk factors, and the interaction of those two groups. The secondary objective is to look at the availability of the healthcare services associated to negative health outcomes of opioid-dependent HIV at-risk population, and also measure some of the accessibility. Since this is a method-oriented session and we have the theme of this whole conference is healthography, I would like to spend more time on the secondary objectives, where I would show how different kinds of GIS and geography-related functions are used to map availability, accessibility, and things like that. But I'm happy to talk more about the primary objective if you're interested after the presentation. So going to study design and data. So study sample is from a placebo-controlled randomized controlled trial of medication-assisted therapy, long title, of buprenorphine used to treat opioid dependence, and the study is called STRIDE. The study has gone through some changes, but when the data that I'm using here is when it was still an RCD model. So there was a two-part to it. In the part A, we screened opioid-dependent HIV at-risk population, and if they were HIV positive, then they moved on to the part B. So for this particular paper, we are using samples from the part A, and the number is 530. Geographic study area is Washington, D.C., and the clinical site where the study and everything took place was the Howard University Hospital. In terms of the data, the outcome variable that I'm using is the addiction severity drug composite score, which is coming from the individual level and from the primary survey. Some of the individual level risk factors are socioeconomic, medical condition, criminal justice history, housing status, and just one or two questions on the social support. So those are all coming from the instruments of the STRIDE study. The second group of factors are data is the facilitators and barriers from the neighborhood, and this I have accumulated from a disparate source, secondary sources, and as we have seen from the first two presentations, that a lot of work actually goes behind getting all this data and prepping and, you know, cleaning up and prepping for actually before we put into the model. So here are that big list of facilitators and barriers, and I couldn't fit all, so I've left out some. Under the facilitator, I have divided into the mental health, substance use, HIV health services, community support, other health service, public safety, and transport facilities. I'm sure there could be more facilities here, and these would actually vary by your study area. So these are very study area specific. In terms of the barriers, crime incident that has been a problem in Washington, D.C., alcohol outlets, park and green spaces, again, depending upon which study area, this open green spaces can be a facilitator where you can really go there and meet friends and relax, or this could be an area where you use drugs are exchanged. So depending upon the study area, this could go in either of the columns here. And there is a bunch of variables talking about the socioeconomic disadvantages and instability, which are all coming from the census. And I've used some principal component analysis to compose them into one or two indices. In terms of method, as I said, I'm going to spend a little bit more time on the GIS-related methods, and they're all done in ESRI's 10.1R GIS and the statistical analysis in R. It's an open source, very good software. So in step one, we did the geocoding. If you're not familiar with the geocoding process, I would like to say one sentence on it. So if you have an address data, it is a process from where that address data is transferred to a point data, preferably a point data in a GIS language or in a GIS software. So if you have good address data with all the components, street number, house number, zip code, and things like that, you could have a very good geocoding process and you have the exact point. If you have only a zip code, you could geocode that to only aerial units, which are zip codes. So with that process, we did the geocoding for all the participants' location and all kinds of facilitators and barriers which had some address information associated to it. Second step, we did simple mapping. We cannot show the exact location of the patients for confidentiality and IRB regulations, so we had to aggregate that by block group levels. Third, we did a point density technique map, which I will show you with the outcome variable here. So point density map is basically transforming discrete points where you have the ASI score associated with those points from a discrete, you know, point, if you imagine a map with a point, to a continuous smooth surface, where you can actually look at the patterns much in a better way. You look at areas, you see high density, you can see low density, and actually can explore more with the pattern than looking at the discrete points. So this is just an example here with the population. So we know that populations is kind of a continuous variable. We say city A has population, the city B has population, but there are people living in between the two cities, A and B. So it's a continuous surface. Same aspect I applied to our outcome variable. The step four is calculating distances. If you're familiar with the distance calculation in ArcGIS or any other GIS software, there are a ton of them. And it is very critical to apply the correct the distance calculation method. If you're dealing with non-human distances like the mosquito flight or any other, doesn't matter what, if you can use the Euclidean distances, which is just a straight line between the two points. But if you are trying to conceptualize how humans travel or walk and things like that, it's very important that we do the distance calculation on road network. Here is a simple example that to show you. This is the Boston Massachusetts Convention Center, and this is the Western Copley place. So if you do a straight line as the crow fly distance, it will be a straight. But we don't go through buildings, right? Cross through buildings or somebody's neighborhood. We have to either walk or drive on roads. So it is very important to calculate distances on road network. Said that, it will depend upon your objective. If you are study objective, it's very focused on accessibility, distances, it is important to capture the distances as much as possible. But if it is, you know, it's one of the many of your risk factors and you don't have the time or resources, it is still okay to do straight line distances. But as a geographer, I would always like to see papers where these kinds of network distances are measured. Step five, we calculated availability of the facilitators. So in here, we always say, well, this is my location. I have two or three facilities around me. But we lack in saying the scale of it. This is, again, from a point of view of a geographer to understand the effect of scale in this health research. So here I have calculated this account of different kinds of health service required for this particular population in a half a mile, in 1 mile, and a block group. These distance thresholds will vary from the study area. DC is a very small area, so this walking half a mile, 1 mile makes sense. But if you're doing in a rural area, these distance thresholds will change. So just to keep in mind, the scale of where you are measuring these variables is very important too. And finally, simple statistical correlation that we are familiar with. So going to some of my selected results here, I'll start with a simple spatial distribution of our participants, 530 participants. Here I have aggregated to block group levels, and we see, and overall, you can see that there is very lack of patients coming from the Northwest. If you're familiar with DC, this would be higher income group, people living there, so not much of we are seeing patients from there. And overall, there's more prevalence in the central region and south of the river, and in the southeast neighborhood, this is the historic Anacostia neighborhood, and we see very high proportion of our patients coming from those areas. Oh, I actually had those circles. So this is the density map where I'm showing the spatial distribution of our outcome variable, which is the drug score. This not only shows the location, but also shows the density, right? So where the patients are and where are the patients with high density of drug score. Again, not a surprise, and very similar to the first map here, this central, south-central region and the southeast neighborhoods, they're showing high ASI scores. The mean value is 0.4, the minimum is 0.05, and the maximum is 0.71. This scale varies from 0 to 1, the ASI score. I have several maps here, which I'm going to only show one here, but I have OST provider map, substance use map, HIV clinics, but I just wanted to show you the opioid substitution therapy providers. And you can see among around 50, 65 of those, 57 are providing the Suboxone, which are kind of interestingly located all in the central and the north central region. There's one cluster here. Can anybody guess what's this area? This is George W. University, George Washington University. Most of those are happening, those clinical trials and all those are happening in their medical center, so it is there. And you have the naltrexone and suboxone also giving in the Howard region here. And only there are five places which are providing methadone. So if you see these two maps side by side, you can see, you can get some idea of the spatial association between where these providers are located and where is the most needy population for these kinds of services. If you're interested to see more maps of this, I can show at the end of the presentation, but I'm just showing one here. This is a heat map of the count of facilities and the participants. Kind of a complex map, so I'll walk you through here. On the x-axis, I have the count of different health facilities that are required for this kind of population, which are not only suffering from opioid dependence and substance use disorders, but other comorbid conditions as well. And on the y-axis, I have the count of the participants. So in the y-axis, if you see, you can roughly will see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 big clusters of people. Right, and this map was created from that distances in the half a mile, distances in the 1 mile, and then the whole broad group. So this is a color-coded heat map of counts of facilities within 1 mile of the participants' location. So you can, if I look at this light color here, which means that this two big clusters of clients had very limited access of healthcare facilities within their 1 mile kind of a neighborhood or distance threshold. So, however, if you see these two clusters here, the colors are getting warmer or towards the red hue, and you can see that they have better access in relation to these two clusters here. If you look at these clusters, this is a cluster of the facilities. So the pharmacies and the HIV pharmacies, these are the pharmacies where you have the ADAP, that's an addiction. Yes, correct, thank you. So that pharmacies there and HIVs, they are kind of located to each other. So this is a cluster formed between the substance use disorder treatments, pharmacy, and HIV AIDS. And these two, STI and hospital, there was more generic. They are serving more generic health facilities. They are more towards, clustered towards one group here. So on this map, we are not only seeing the clusters of patients which have higher and lower access to these facilities, but we're also seeing clusters of facilities which are nearby each other. So it's a bivariate relation between the facilities and the participants. Going to the statistical correlations, with the individual level factors, age was a positive relation. I have a slide towards the end where it talks about the description of the participants, and very uniquely, among this 530 clients, the mean age was pretty high. So age was a kind of a positive associate barrier for their high ASI drug score. Living with substance users at the time was also positive correlation, homelessness, and alcohol and drug treatment was a negative association. In terms of neighborhood, distance to facilities in general, I have the specific facilities, but in general, higher distance means higher ASI scores, bus stop has a negative, crime has positive, and socioeconomic disadvantage of the block groups, which includes poverty, race, foreign-born, the different diversity of race, all those variables went into in this measuring the socioeconomic disadvantage. Interesting and hard to interpret is what I have found from this correlation of the neighborhood and the individual. So when I had an interaction variable of distance an African percentage of African American population, it had a positive relation with the ASI Duff score, which means higher. Higher that distance, higher is that was the association with ASI score. Distance with white population was negative, and again, crime in African population was has a positive. If I had more time, I could have gone back to those maps to show that they are really segregated. So therefore, these distances, they are, maybe the African American population are segregated in different pockets of the DC, so they are traveling more to get to those facilities. So we need to dig more into this and try to interpret this interaction effects. But I was excited to see these results. In terms of summary, majority of the participants were located in the south central and southern parts of the district. Participants with higher ASI drug score were concentrated in the southeast, which is again those areas where we have limited number of different kinds of health facilities, and they had to travel more from the southeast to the other parts to access those facilities. In terms of distribution of health facilities, and overall I wouldn't say that they are significantly skewed or clustered in one area, but they have lower access in the southeast neighborhoods. For another paper that we are working, we actually looked into the multiple services that were provided in the in these, and we are seeing some correlation that even though in overall the access is okay, but when we talk about comorbid conditions and things like that, there are limited number of facilities which are providing, say, substance use and HIV testing or opioid substitution therapy and HIV testing, so there's multiple services. And age, homelessness, proximity to bus stops, distance to an African American population, these were significant individual level factors that came out. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Ghosh. Are there any questions? We have time for one or two.
What did you
say? I actually... we mapped it, say, 3-4 months back. So if I use that temporal scale, there are 4 needle exchanges in the whole of the district. And I actually don't have the map here, do I? No, I have the side. They are mainly located in the central, and there's one needle exchange in this area here. This is, seems to be the area where most of the facilities are located in the southeast neighborhood. So, yes, needle exchange is played an important role too. Corplet map, in terms of method, corplet map is still you're bounded by the unit of spatial analysis you choose. So there is a error in geography, it's called modifiable aerial unit problem. So if I had a map here, so let me go back here. Yes, so this is my block groups. Would this pattern change if I have did the corplet map at the track level? Right? So when you do a corplet map, which is a valid way to explore your initial results, but if you, we have to keep in mind that whether the choice of your unit of analysis has any effect on your pattern that you're seeing. You don't want your pattern to be biased by the choice of your unit of analysis. With that, if I do this kind of map, I am still preserving the confidentiality of the patients here. I'm not showing the points, but I'm using actually the point data, so I'm not bound to any spatial unit, and I'm then doing a density service, surface. But you have to keep in mind that you have to give a, when you run the program, you have to say the neighborhood. So I use a half a mile. So if your study area is big or if you have more data, you have to play around with that neighborhood and say, so within half a mile, it takes all the points of my patients, calculates the distance, goes to the next area and does the same thing. And this way it smooths out. So it's also a smoothing factor. So if you have a point level data, I would recommend to start with the density and see, because you don't want to lose that high resolution data that you have.